morning. It is 9:03. Today is Thursday, March 26, 2015. If you're joining us off net or online, my name is Senator Anna McKinnon, and this is the Senate Finance Committee. We're meeting in Juneau, Alaska, in Alaska State Capitol, room 532. With me at the table, Co-Chairman Kelly, Vice Chairman Michicki, Senator Bishop, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Olson. Before the committee today is SB 34, Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund Investments, as well as SJR 2, a constitutional amendment regarding GO bonds for student loans. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? The first item on today's agenda is SB 34, Power Cost Equalization Fund Investment. An act relating to investments of the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund and providing for an effective date. If I could ask Pamela Leary from the Treasury Division, as well as Gary Bader from the Treasury Division, to the microphones, if you could identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Pam Leary. I'm the Director of the Treasury Division in the Department of Revenue.
I'm Gary Bader, Chief Investment Officer, Department of Revenue.
And we have a presentation for you that's going to talk a little bit about the PCE Endowment Fund, its history, and the SB 34 bill in front of you today. The purpose of the fund is essentially to reimburse the costs associated with managing the fund, but primarily to fund the Power Cost Equalization Rural Electrocapitalization Fund, which helps to reduce the cost of energy in areas of high electrical costs. 7% of the monthly average market value of the fund for the previous three fiscal years may be appropriated. The fund was created in 2000, and it was established by an appropriation of $100 million from the CBR. And then it received additional proceeds from the sale of the Fort Dam Pool Hydroelectric Project, as well as two additional appropriations in 2007 and in 2012. The balance as of the end of February is $986 million. What the bill SB 34 does is simply removes the stated nominal return target of at least 7% from the statute, and it directs the Commissioner of Revenue to invest the fund in a manner that can meet the objectives of the program. Why is this important? It allows the Commissioner of Revenue to invest in less risky investments when appropriate that will still meet the financial needs of the program. With the bill is a zero fiscal note as well. And if there are no questions about that, I'd like to turn it over to Gary Bader to talk about some investment considerations.
Thank you. Madam Chair, it's fundamental to investment management to seek the highest rate of return commensurate with an appropriate amount of risk. The current statute directs the Commissioner of Revenue to try to attain a 7% rate of return without regard to the amount of risk he or she would undertake. Thank you. What you see on this page is the capital market assumptions prepared for the Alaska Retirement Management Board by Callan and Associates. Other investment consultants and Wall Street firms prepare similar capital market assumptions, and they tend to be very similar to one another. The statistics represent Callan's projections of the returns and standard deviations of many of the most popular asset classes for the 10-year period ending 2024. Looking down the left-hand column, you can see various asset classes listed by Callan Associates with broad domestic equity at the top. Essentially, broad domestic equity represents U.S. stocks. I now draw your attention to the third column over, labeled one-year arithmetic. This represents the average of one-year investment returns Callan might expect that the asset class to earn over the next 10 years. Next, I draw your attention to the fourth column of numbers, or the sixth column from the left, labeled projected risk or standard deviation. Standard deviation is a measure of volatility of the investment returns. Roughly two-thirds of the time, an investment's return will be plus or minus one standard deviation of the arithmetic return. Now let's look at the second numeric column labeled tenure geometric. This column represents the compounded annual rate of return Callan projects that an asset class will earn over the next 10 years. Notice as you read down the columns, the greater the standard deviation, the further the 10-year geometric or compounded return will be from the arithmetic return. The higher the geometric return, the higher the standard deviation, the more difference you will have in the compounded return. I'll just try and give you an example of how that might work. Let's just say we have an asset that is expected to earn an annual average rate of return of zero. 1 year it's up 50%, the next year it's down 50%. So okay, on average it returns zero. But now let's apply some numbers to that. If you started with $100 and you earned 50%, your $100 would now be $150. If you lost 50% the next year, you'd lose 50% of $150. Your investment value would be down to $75. That's why volatility and the amount of risk is important to achieving your long-term rate of return. If the projections hold for the PCE to have a 10-year return of 7%, nearly all the PCE's investment would have to be broad equities, or U.S. stocks. That would be about 88% would be required to earn the rate of return that the statutes now call for. Domestic equities have been in a bull market for 6 years. Interest rates are low and are expected to be increasing mid-year. Nobody knows for sure whether or not that will happen, but if it does, it is axiomatic that as interest rates rise, the value of fixed income investments fall. A 7% return was probably a very reasonable expectation 15 years ago when a 10-year treasury bond was earning 6%. Now it's earning about 2%. When interest rates go up, bond values fall, stock market is at a 6-year high, and we don't know when, but it is unlikely that the stock market will continue to rise for another 6 years. Passage of this bill would allow the Commissioner of Revenue to attempt to meet the goals of the Power Cost Equalization Program while managing risk.
Thank you, Mr. Bader. We have a question. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bader, are there any other of our investment funds that had a statutory requirement for return? That seems unusual, especially with something as risky as a 7% target.
It's the only one that's separately managed that we focus on that has a target return, yes.
Senator Machicki.
That's laced with unintended consequences. I'm just fascinated that seemed like a good idea at the time, but I don't know. Someone who may have suggested that might be at the table, so I'll soften that statement. I don't know.
So if we did a bill walkthrough, we would say, so the general public knew, that the bill before us actually proposes to remove 7%, is it 7.5%? 7% expected return to just a nominal rate so that there would be a more conservative investment strategy on the power cost equalization fund, just so that the general public knows what we're talking about, and which is specifically what Senator Machicki is referring to. Why did we call out in statute a mandatory target goal of 7%? And if I were to try to think about that, it's because people wanted to grow the fund as quickly as possible so that rural communities that see this dividend could experience a greater level of support in those communities. but in the markets and the volatility that Alaska has seen over the last 2008 forward, we may want to secure that risk a bit differently. And the administration is proposing to take a more conservative approach. Is that fair?
That is fair.
Please continue.
I think that actually concludes our presentation, other than to answer questions and to let you know that we do have a website. The Treasury Division has a website that has a lot of great information, including the balance of this fund and information about it, its statutes, et cetera, as well as the other funds that we manage.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, do you have comments? I know that you have been here through all the different appropriations and the creation of the fund. Was this a Senate Finance Committee bill?
I don't recall, but I remember last year we had discussed the same topic, and I had requested that we reduce the target from 7% to 5%, which would be more realistic, and this is another approach. But the intent is to make sure that as markets rise and fall, there may be times when the fund earns in excess of the payout, which has been the case for several years now. But that does not mean that in the future we would have draws from the fund that would be larger than the rate of return, and over time they would level out, and that is why I support a lower interest rate. But during the last 5 years, as was mentioned, we've seen a bull market, and there have been substantial increases in the fund, and I would state to the committee members here that during those times there's always the temptation to draw and utilize those funds for other purposes, but we must realize that there are going to be times when the earnings are going to be less than what the draw is. So over time there is that would average out. Again, it's always from the starting point. You know, it's close to, it's 900 and some million today, but we don't know what that may be with future stock markets.
So I have a question. I pulled Alaska State statute and have read just a bit more, and it appears that the 7% rate actually is tied to what can be drawn from the fund, and so C appears to be unaffected, and so whatever the rate of return might be, as the administration is trying to create a more conservative approach, it's also limiting the amount that can be withdrawn from the fund. So I just wanted to put that on the record, that there's an unintended consequence for the legislature, because right now we can withdraw from the fund up to 7%. And so I'm just making sure that as we review this, I support a more conservative approach to the investment. I want everyone to understand, too, then it will maximize or put a limit on what can be drawn from the fund at any one particular time, even though it comes later in the statute. It says this does not create a dedicated fund, but it is creating a barrier to access the funds that would not be greater than whatever was drawn or earned on the fund. Is that correct?
I believe the statutes allow the average of 7% monthly return over a three-year period. There would be times, of course, that the commissioner would set an asset allocation that would target an earnings rate of less than that. There may also be times when the commissioner would be knowledgeable about the first part, about the part of the statute you just read, where he or she might attempt to have a rate of return that is greater than 7%. I'm not sure if that addressed the specifics of your question, but.
So, Mr. Bader, so 7%, up to 7% still could be withdrawn.
Yes.
Thank you.
And could I add something? Over the life of the fund, the rate of return that it actually earned was 6%.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman and I discussed this last year. Senator Machicki.
So, Madam Chair, I'm just looking at the bill. Of course, I don't have the statute in front of me, I don't see where that actually changes the amount that can be drawn. I see that it removes the 7% return.
Senator Michicki, that's why I was asking whether I was right or not. And there are two different points in Alaska state statute that the 7% is referred to, and the administration is only touching one of them. So we could draw up to the 7% amount, and that is not, it's not affected, but the rate of return is.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It was my error, so. Senator Hoffman, members of the committee, the administration is proposing no percentage rate, and that concerns me a bit, in that we could get way conservative with the investment strategy. I would just say that we had a similar conversation with many members of a previous Senate Finance Committee, and we talked about a 4, 4.5, 5% rate of return. And so I'm wondering why we didn't just reduce the percentage versus having a nominal return. I'm wondering whether we'll get a very, we'll let the asset just sit. So I'm wondering if it's not pressing you to try to achieve a 4% rate of return, or why we're not picking a number.
I think that actually there has been legislation in the past that took that approach. Did not pass the legislature, if my memory is correct. The way the Commissioner of Revenue sets the allocation for asset allocation for all the funds that he or she is responsible for, usually begins with some analysis by staff and then recommendation to the Commissioner. I have not had specific discussions with the Commissioner about this fund because the legislation is not passed yet, but it would be my expectation that we would take a recommendation to the Commissioner that would be based upon achieving a real rate of return, one that is earned before consideration of inflation, that would be somewhere in the 4 to 5% range, probably closer to 4.
Thank you. Comments from committee members. Senator Hoffman.
And from my viewpoint, I think that we should set a minimum rate of return with some flexibility for the department to have the ultimate decision on the Commissioner of Revenue that may be there for 4 years, may be there for 8 years. There have been many commissioners, and the attention that one commissioner might give to the program versus another will vary greatly. And I would be more comfortable with the approach that you and I have discussed, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Michicki.
Madam Chair, I'd love to have the time to look at the other investment funds we have in the state, but I have to say that I believe it's micromanaging to require rate of return. If we were going to get to that level of telling the fund managers how to manage his fund, I'd rather we define an acceptable level of risk than an acceptable level of return. Fund managers typically are going to do the best they can with a set parameter of risk, and defining the rate of return to me is, I believe it's outside of our purview. I mean, we can do it. Should we? I don't believe we do it in the other funds. I will do some research on that. But we have folks that live and die market expectations and capitalization of our funds, and I'm not sure it's what we do every day.
Thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Would it be just for conversation prudent to have the ability to manage the fund so it meets the outcome at the end of the year and still protect the corpus of the fund?
Through the chair. I believe during the asset allocation process, one of the items that is looked at is what is the need of the fund, what's the purpose of the fund, how much is going to be required to pay out of the fund, and that is definitely an ingredient in the equation of creating the asset allocation. So that 7% outlay target is currently out there, and so that is definitely something that's considered during the asset allocation process.
And thank you. Any further questions from committee members? With that, we'll open the public hearing. I appreciate the introduction of the bill. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 34, an act relating to the investment of the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund? Anyone at all? Is there anyone online wishing to testify on Senate Bill 34? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Hoffman, Senator Machicki, if you're interested in this bill, if you could get any proposed amendments or conversation to my office, we'll set this bill aside and move on to the next item on our agenda. The next item on our agenda is Senate Joint Resolution 2. It's proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to contracting state debt for post-secondary student loans. If I could ask Kristen Pratt from my office, as well as Diane Behrens, to the microphones. If you could identify yourself for the record and present SJR 2 to the Senate Finance Committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Pratt, and I'm staff to Senator Anna McKinnon. Before you this morning is Senate Joint Resolution 2. It amends Article 9, Section 8 of the Constitution of Alaska to allow for contracting of state debt for post-secondary student loans. Nationally, as the committee is aware, student loan debt has amounted to over $1 trillion at this point, and Alaskan students are included in that high level of debt. So we, Senator McKinnon, wanted to look at ways to lower the interest rates in an effort to reduce the debt for Alaskans. So this legislation is a no-cost way for the state to reducing interest rates and in turn reduce the debt that burdens Alaskans. I'm happy.
Ms. Behrens, do you have any comments on SJR 2?
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the executive officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. I would just like to express my appreciation on behalf of the organization to Senator McKinnon for bringing this forward again this year. This is one meaningful way that Alaska can support students in financing their own post-secondary education. If this went to the voters were to approve it, we would expect to be able to reduce the interest rate on loans by about 1% below the rate that we could otherwise finance in the markets without this support from the state. Additionally, we believe that we could make some modest adjustments to the credit criteria that currently applies to applicants that would allow more students to qualify for the loans and be able to receive the loans. And lastly, it would be an opportunity for us to create a refinancing opportunity so that students who currently have outstanding higher rate debt might be able, who have left school and are in the workforce, might be able to achieve some reduction in the burden that their student loans represent by refinancing at a lower rate.
Thank you, Ms. Behrens. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 2, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to contracting state debt for post-secondary student loans. Public hearing is open. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify? Is there anyone online wishing to testify on SJR 2? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. With that, is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing and hearing none, we have a meeting set for this afternoon. If the if I would throw out to the committee that I would I'm making a recommendation that we move SB 32. It's the timber bill. So if you have any amendments or any consideration, please let my office know, as well as Senate Bill 33, fees for tires. Those will be the two bills that will be brought back before the committee in preparation to move those to the Rules Committee. Co-Chairman Kelly.
Madam Chair, just a notice to the members. I'm sure you're all aware we're going into the operating budget next week. Budgets are closing out. I think you've got one tonight. And Senator Bishop, you've got one? Is it tomorrow?
I had one last night.
Oh, okay.
And two Saturday.
Okay.
Two closeouts.
And everybody seems to be on schedule.
Senator Killiers is Friday night.
Okay. Okay. So just a reminder, and you've got two to close out?
Thank you, Senator Kellys. For those at home, the operating budget is a huge deal for the state of Alaska. It's being managed by the Senate Finance Committee under the leadership of Senator Kelly. I appreciate all that hard work, Senator Kelly, and all the subcommittee chairmen. Anything else to come before the committee? We're adjourned.